It's a well-documented fact that though seldom short of ideas, Douglas found the actual physical process of writing extremely difficult, and any diversions would be seized upon with unbridled enthusiasm. On the 1st of November 1983, Douglas signed a contract with Pan Books for the fourth volume in the Hitchhiker series, So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. Unfortunately for the publishers, the ultimate in displacement activities had arisen shortly after the contract was signed, when Douglas was invited to produce a computer game of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. To a mind like Douglas's, this was a far more interesting and challenging project. The Hitchhiker book did finally appear a year later. After a further 6 months, and a preoccupation with merchandising Hitchhiker goods, the actual UK launch of the computer game was featured on BBC TV's Saturday Review programme when Douglas talked to Minette Marin.
Were you immediately interested in the possibilities of computers?
No, I was a real technophobe. Well, more than that, in fact. I mean, I feel I sort of spent the last few years of my life making my living by making fun of computers. And then suddenly it turned around and bit me back. And this was only about 2 years ago. And then I discovered these interactive fiction games. And that was quite a revelation for me, because up till then, when people said computer game, I thought, it's shooting down rocket ships and chasing little aliens around mazes and all that kind of boring stuff, which A, I was bored by, and B, I didn't have the hand-to-eye coordination necessary to get any decent score. So I didn't like them for that reason. And then when I think I played... Original Adventure, and then one of the Infocom games called Suspended. And suddenly discovered that there was a sort of great world of sort of wit and invention and logical problems and all this kind of thing going on there. And I suddenly thought, I would love to be doing this.
I think a lot of people have great difficulty in understanding what a computer game is, if not just a glorified video game. Can you explain?
Well, it's text only. It's much more like a book than anything else. But you get text coming up on the screen which tells you where you are, what's happening, what's going on. Deathless prose, of course. Then it leaves you stranded. It says, okay, well, what do you want to do about it? It's rather like life in that respect. It doesn't actually offer you options. It just says, here you are, this is what's going on. Do something. So you find yourself being drawn into the story as one of the characters. Things don't happen to characters in a book. It actually happens to you, and you have to respond and deal with it. So it's a mixture of sort of storytelling and problem-solving and lateral thinking and sort of strange species of logic.
You play a lot of author's tricks in the game. Can you give us some examples?
Yes, so here's something you couldn't do in a book. You play the role of Arthur Dent in the story, to begin with. You don't necessarily know anything different is going to happen. In the early part of the story, you have various situations to react to, have various people to react to. You encounter Ford Prefect, and you react to him, and various things happen. And it's up to you what you do. What you don't know at that point is that a later part of the game, you're going to use the infinite improbability drive and suddenly get thrown back into that same scene, only this time you're Ford Prefect. Suddenly, things you did earlier acquire a great consequence, because the game will remember how you behaved towards Ford Prefect and will reflect that in the way that Arthur Dent now behaves to you when you're playing Ford Prefect. So in a sense, you have to sort of develop a kind of sort of social responsibility, you know, do as you would be done by. A development I'm looking forward to is when one's able to use with computers compact disc technology, so that instead of having you type the instructions in and you get text back, you will be able to say your instructions, you will be able to take part in the story, and what you will get back is not on the screen but huge stereo drama, which will be manipulated and controlled by the computer in response to what you do, and it'll be as if you're actually taking part in the drama yourself. I think that's an immensely exciting possibility, and I think much more interesting than the sort of graphic possibilities of computers, because again, it plays straight to your mind.
Douglas then gave a brief demonstration of the kind of future he envisaged for computer games, when the entire process would be voice activated.
Now, this is going to be your first day on a strange planet, so I want you all wrapped up, snug and warm, and no playing with any naughty, bug-eyed monster.
Right, well, this computer's being very irritating. I think we'd probably lose our patience with it and try just a little gentle abuse. Just bloody well open the exit hatch, will you, computer?
Who said that?
We'll just try again. Come on, open up the exit hatch.
Whoever said that owns up.
Oh, God. I don't know what to do here.
I'm waiting. I can wait all day if necessary.
I think the judicious exercise of a little senseless violence. Computer, if you don't open up the exit hatch immediately, I shall go to your data banks with a very large axe and give you a reprogramming you'll never forget. Is that clear?
Douglas did contribute to two other computer games around this time, Bureaucracy and Labyrinth. But 12 years later, he proudly launched his own new game, Starship Titanic, which for the first time was an interactive game that you could actually talk to and it would talk back, often with a very argumentative parrot.
Douglas has been developing the Starship Titanic CD-ROM game for quite a while with his company. And he'd shown me various bits of it as it developed. And then he asked me if I'd go along and do the voice of the parrot. And I said, are you sure? I mean, do you think I'd be all right for the voice of the parrot? And Douglas said to me, Terry, you've always been playing parrots. That's all you've ever played. And I suddenly thought, you know, spam, spam, spam. He's not the Messiah, he's a very naughty boy. It's quite obvious. I'd always been playing parrots, and I'd never realised it. It took Douglas to point this out to me.
Starship Titanic was an attempt to merge text-based games with graphic games, and Radio 4's PM programme brought it to the listeners' attention via Chris Nuttall, their internet correspondent.
You are entering parrot space. Tickets, please. Show your passports. Get a bloody move on. Give us a nut. Give us a bloody pistachio.
The ship's parrot, with the voice of Monty Python's Terry Jones, is just one of numerous unhelpful and rude characters on the Starship Titanic, which you find yourself aboard after it rather abruptly arrives in your virtual living room one night. The object of the game is to find out what caused the Titanic to crash, as it takes you back into space with its crew of dysfunctional robots, and then find your way home. For Douglas Adams, the game presented many more possibilities than a book or script, and required a huge collaborative effort over 2 years.
Something like 10,000 lines of dialogue in this, sort of 16 hours of pre-recorded dialogue. So there was a small team of us who worked on that. The final collaboration actually is with the player himself or herself, because with a CD-ROM, it just sits there until somebody starts to interact with it.
The complexity of the conversation is the big feature of the game. Players wander through the 26 rooms of the ship, talking to the characters, or bots as they're known, that they meet, by typing questions and answers. Tim Browse, the technical leader for the game's development, demonstrates this in an exchange with the woman at reception.
I have no time for freeloaders.
She'll just carry on being offensive to her as long as you like. You know, I can say things like, screw you.
I don't wish to be rude. Well, in fact, I do. So, pig bladder to you.
She's just an exercise in rudeness, really. She's actually inspired by an airline check-in clerk that Douglas met once, and she's just sort of blossomed from that, really.
Experienced PC gamers who've tried Titanic out say they're frustrated by the slow navigation through the lush graphics of Art Deco interiors and the lack of a decent plot. They found the conversations aimless, lacking in proper rewards, and the characters irritating after a while. Although it's meant to appeal to all ages, 9-year-old Luke Gagan was equally unimpressed.
It's a bit boring and slow, and I think it's got some funny parts in it, which is quite good. When the man spoke, it's quite funny.
And what do you think of the idea of having a conversation with it?
It's quite good to be able to do that. Don't know what I'd ask it, but yeah, it's quite good. My friends might like it, but not a lot of them.
But Starship Titanic will doubtless appeal to the legions of Douglas Adams fans in Britain, America, and inhabiting cult sites on the internet, which Adams next hopes to chart properly with a version of his Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
It's a huge, huge task, and it's beyond the resources we have at the moment, but it's something, you know, that's very much in our sights.
I suppose you do see similarities between exploring the galaxy and exploring the internet.
I guess. I mean, they're both vast wildernesses.
The letter D now.